ways. Yes, there we are, and here I am. That was The Soft Boys. Before that, Olivia Tremor Control for a track or two. And, yeah, I think that's where we were at the last break. Hi there. It's like 10:03 here. This is the Big Waste of Time. Global Chemical Corporate Empire and Theme Park Industrial Complex Consortium presents the Doncast with me, Don, the Don Rosberger, here on the station you love in the town where you live. WUVT FM 90.7 Blacksburg, Virginia. Of course, I guess you could possibly be listening from elsewhere via the tubes, but that's there. And here I am, and it is in the 10 o'clock hour. Don has been chugging forth for three quarters of an hour now after the cone-inspired parking snafu. But we're going to march forth. I could make this... I promise you I could make this to be a more difficult listening hour, but I won't. I'm going to go for long form here for a moment. Or seven. Here we go. Now to the album of the soundtrack of the trailer of the film of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. You're getting some of it because they told me to. And I listened to the voices. I learned my lessons a long time ago. Learn your lessons. Do what you're told.
Congratulations on buying the executive version of this record. You have chosen wisely, and we value your discerning taste in deciding to pay the few extra pence for a product of real quality. Everything on this record has been designed to meet the exacting standards which you have naturally come to expect. The record itself is made from the very finest Colombian extruded polyvinyl. The center hole has been created to fit exactly onto your spindle with all the precision of finest Swiss craftsmanship. The audio content has been quality graded to give you the finest in listening pleasure. There is little or no offensive material apart from four cunts, one clitoris, and a foreskin. And as they only occur in this opening introduction, you're past them now. You can relax and enjoy this quality product, secure in the knowledge that it has been specially created for the lover of fine things and the man of good taste. Oh, sorry. You can edit that out, can't you?
Yeah, no problem.
The album of the soundtrack of the trailer of the film of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Pipe.
Live from the classic Silbury Hills.
Hello and welcome to the classic Silbury Hill for the 3:10 performance of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I can see through the door of the gentleman's that the B feature bring me the head of Don Reeve. There's only a few minutes left to run, just time for me to tell you a few quick words about the theatre. The Classic Silbury Hill, formerly the social club of the Andover Parks and Burials Department, was converted into a cinema in 1941 by Ken Polson, father of John, in the Gothic Renaissance style. The lavatories here comprise two freestanding fixtures and a 12-inch enamel wall bar with self-rinsing bar and auto-sump grill, and were opened by Gary Cooper in 1957. Well, I can see now Eunice and Maureen Zappa, salesgirls here through two walls and six different Tory administrations, making their way to the front of the auditorium with their sales trays full of ice creams, lollipops, sweets, dubbin, and broken glass. There are several people in the audience this afternoon. This is an old-age pensioner's afternoon, and I can see Mrs. Skelton from the Customs and Excise in row G. And away there by the statue of Pan is Mr. Alway, the local Seamen's Union organiser. A surprise visitor is Mr. Bhutto, the president of Pakistan in Roque. And up in the circle is Enid Pickles, local representative of the Baader-Meinhof group. She's the only one armed here this afternoon. Now, while the film Monty Python and the Holy Grail is being loaded into the huge projectors by Vincent Wong, the Sino-Scottish projectionist here in Silver Hill, let's look back to that never-to-be-forgotten occasion when the film was premiered in London's busy West End. Bob Gandy is the reporter.
Hello and welcome to Old Compton Street. It's a mild night here, warm for early April, and a large crowd has gathered outside to watch this great gala night for the stars. Cars are arriving quite fast now. Here's a beautiful Rolls-Royce silver Corniche, all white, sliding gracefully up to the doors of the cinema. Commissioner Alf Venables, ex-father of Terry, steps forward, opens the door, and out steps a radiant Miss Taylor herself, looking absolutely stunning in an off-the-shoulder organza and silk dress. And next comes Burt Reynolds in a huge red Ferrari sports car. Oh my God, Burt Reynolds has run into the back of the Corniche, and Miss Taylor turns and makes a splendid gesture. Great heavens, that's Steve McQueen, whose 18-gear Daytona Special has somersaulted coolly piled into the back bumper of... And who's this coming through the windscreen of the Mini? Yes, it's lovely star Barbara Streisand, flying through the air in a beautiful Bill Gibb creation. And she's landed half on Roger Moore, looking quite well, and half on Jack Nicholson, who's not so well. And who's that under the back wheel? It's... Yes, it's Faye Dunaway. No, it's Victor Mature in the blazing frock. Yes, all the stars are here tonight. That's Joan Crawford squashed in between the bonnet and Pete Murray and the box office door. And Shirley Temple, her head battered out of all the...
Oh, yes, a great galaxy of stars there. But now, here at the Classic, the lights are dimming. The film is about to commence. So, from the gentleman's rest room, over to my colleague, Dougie Nero, in the rear stall.
Welcome to the rear stalls. I'm in row T, just three seats along from the legendary seat 12. And now the titles are coming to an end as the film finally gets, well and truly, all your own. I'm sorry, I don't know why I said that. Anyway, the film is now underway. And it's going quite well at the moment. Ah.
Whoa now!
Very good. Well, the audience here certainly enjoyed that visual joke. I only hope the soundtrack does justice to it, because it certainly was the most outstanding joke. Well, it's still all pretty visual so far.
Who goes there? It is I, Arthur, son of Uther Pendragon from the castle of Camelot.
This is the first dialogue King of the Britain, scene. A very funny little scene, this between Arthur and his servant Patsy there, and two unnamed soldiers standing on the battlements
of this
castle.
And this is my trusty servant Patsy. We have ridden the length and breadth of the land in search of knights who will join me in my court at Camelot. I must speak with your lord and master.
And Arthur is engaged in asking the soldier standing right up there on the top of the wall if he knows of any knights.
So,
might be prepared
we have ridden since the snows
King
of winter covered this land.
The round
through the
table.
Kingdom of Mercia, through
it you get the coconuts. In a cheerful
we found
and
them.
Quite
found
unexpected
them. In Mercia, the coconuts tropical.
Sorry.
Bring out your dead.
Here's one.
Ninepence.
I'm not dead.
What?
Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead. Here. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not.
He isn't? Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
Oh, I can't take him like that. It's against regulations.
I don't want to go on the cart.
Oh, don't be such a baby.
I can't take him.
I feel fine.
Well, do us a favour.
I can't.
Well, can you hang around a couple of minutes? He won't be long.
No, I've got to go to Robinson's. They've lost nine today.
Well, when's your next run?
Thursday.
You think I'll go for a walk?
You're not fooling anyone, you know. Look. Isn't there something you can do?
I feel happy! I feel happy!
Oh, thanks very much.
Not at all. See you on Thursday.
Right. Who's that then? I don't know. Must be a king. Why? He hasn't got shit all over him.
Old woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Oh, who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed, bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh?
That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
We have found the witch, may we burn her?
Burn her!
Burn her!
How do you know she is a witch?
She looks like one!
Yeah, she looks like one!
Bring her forward.
Not a witch, I'm not a witch.
But you are dressed as one.
They dressed me up like this.
And
this isn't my nose, it's a false one.
Well?
Well, we did do the nose.
The nose?
And the hat. But she's a witch.
Did you dress her up like this?
No!
Yes, a bit.
She has got a wart.
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt.
A newt?
We got better.
Burn her, Eddie!
Quiet! There are ways of telling whether she is a witch.
Are they? Huh? What are they? Tell her!
Do they hurt? Tell me. What do you do with witches?
Burn them!
And what do you burn apart from witches?
More witches!
Wood! So, why do witches burn?
Because they're made of wood.
Good!
Oh, yeah.
So... how do we tell whether she is made of wood?
Build a bridge out of her.
Ah, but can you not also make bridges out of stone?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Does a wood sink in water?
No, no.
No, it floats. It floats.
Throw her into the pool.
What also floats in water?
Fred. Apples.
Very small rocks.
Cider.
A great gravy.
Cherries.
Mud.
Churches.
Lead. Lead.
A duck.
Exactly. So, logically,
if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood.
And therefore...
A witch!
A witch!
Good evening. The last scene was interesting from the point of view of a professional logician because it contained a number of logical fallacies, that is, invalid propositional constructions and syllogistic forms of the type so often committed by my wife. All wood burns, states Sir Bedivere. Therefore, he concludes, all that burns is wood. This is, of course, pure bullshit. Universal affirmatives can only be partially converted. All of Alma Cogan is dead, but only some of the class of dead people are Alma Cogan. Obvious, one would think. However, my wife does not understand this necessary limitation of conversion of a proposition. Consequently, she does not understand me. For how can a woman expect to appreciate a professor of logic if the simplest clothyard syllogism causes her to flounder? For example, given the premise all fish live underwater and all mackerel are fish, my wife will conclude not that all mackerel live underwater, but that if she buys kippers, it will not rain, or that trout live in trees, or even that I do not love her any more. This she calls using her intuition. I call it crap, and it gets me very irritated because it is not logical. There will be no supper tonight, she will sometimes cry, upon my return home. Why not, I will ask. Because I have been screwing the milkman all day, she will say, quite oblivious of the howling error she has made. But, I will wearily point out, even given that the activities of screwing the milkman and getting supper are mutually exclusive, now that the screwing is over, surely then supper may now logically be good. You don't love me anymore, she will now often postulate. If you did, you would give me one now and again, so that I would not have to rely on that rancid Pakistani for my orgasms. I will give you one after you have got me my supper, I now usually scream, but not before, as you understand, making her bang, contingent on the arrival of my supper. God, you turn me on when you're angry, you ancient brute, she now mysteriously deduces, forcing her sweetly throbbing tongue down my throat. Fuck supper, I now invariably conclude, throwing logic somewhat joyously to the four winds, and so we thrash about on our milk-stained floor, transported by animal passion, until we sink back exhausted onto the cartons of yogurt. I'm afraid I seem to have strayed somewhat from my original brief, but in a nutshell, sex is more fun than logic. One cannot prove this, but it is Everest is, or that Alma Cogan isn't. Good night.
And did that really just how we know the Earth to be banana shaped?
This new learning amazes me, Sir Bedivere. Explain again how sheep's bladders may be employed to prevent earthquakes.
Certainly, sir.
Look, my liege!
Camelot.
Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines to call a scene, to footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we've given rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're all come mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm along. Oh, we're tough and able, quite indefatigable. Between our quests we seem to best and impersonate our gable. It's a busy life in Camelot.
I have to push the pram along.
On second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right. Right.
Arthur. Arthur. King of the Britons. Oh, don't grovel. One thing I can't stand, it's people groveling.
Sorry.
And don't apologize. Every time I try to talk to someone, it's sorry this and forgive me that, and I'm not worthy. What are you doing now?
I'm averting my eyes, O Lord.
Well, don't. It's like those miserable psalms. They're so depressing. Now knock it off.
Yes, Lord.
Right. Arthur, King of the Britons. Your knights of the Round Table shall have a task to make them an example in these dark times.
Good idea, O Lord.
Of course it's a good idea. Behold, Arthur, this is the Holy Grail. Look well, Arthur, for it is your sacred task to seek this grail. That is your purpose, Arthur. The quest for the Holy Grail.
A blessing from the Lord.
God be praised.
Well, as Arthur rides off with this stunning view, mainly visuals from his countryside, a word about the car park here at Silverbury.
Well, the classic Silver Hill is very fortunate in having entirely adequate parking facilities adjacent to the cinema. The car park itself has an asphalt base, rimmed with a 4-inch concrete strip sunk into shale and brick nogging to a depth of 6 feet. The parking area can accommodate up to 65 vehicles arranged in a crescent formation. Typical of the skill of architect Una Bolson, mother of Ken, father of John, is that the park is self-draining. Over to you, Dougie.
And here we are back with the film as Arthur approaches another castle. 170 to 180 feet high, I should say, with an inner and outer bailey in the...
Oh, shut up!
King Arthur, and these are my knights of the Round Table. Whose castle is this?
This is the castle of my master, Guido Luamba.
Go and tell your master that we have been charged by God with a sacred quest. If he will give us food and shelter for the night, he can join us in our quest for the Holy Grail.
Well, I'll ask him, but I don't think he'll be very keen. He's already got one, you see.
What?
He says they've already got one.
Are you sure he's got one?
Oh, yes, it's very nice.
I told him we already got one.
Well, can we come up and have a look?
Of course not. You are English type, sir.
Well, what are you then?
I'm French. Why do you think I have this outrageous accent, you silly king?
What are you doing in England?
Mind your own business.
If you will not show us the Grail, we shall take your castle by force.
You don't frighten us, English pig dogs. Go and boil your bottom, sons of a silly person. I'll blow my nose at you, so-called Arthur King. You and all your silly English kniggets.
What a strange person.
Now look here, my good man.
I don't want to talk to you no more, you empty-headed animal food trough whopper. I fart in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Is there someone else up there we can talk to?
No. Now go away, or I shall taunt you a second time.
The management of this theater wish to announce they have received certain information to suggest that there may be a bomb located on the premises. Patrons are requested to evacuate this theater as quickly as possible. While evacuating, the audience may wish to avail themselves of the extensive range of facilities offered in our foyer sales display. Soft drinks, chocolates, and boiled sweets, a variety of dairy ice. Hot dogs, roasted peanuts, old copies of Newsweek, big prophylactics, dubbin, broken glass.
The announcement to which you are now listening is available only on the executive version of this record and is not available on any other version.
Yes. So there we are in the middle of the record, and the Don had a choice, and I was like, do I make the radio listening audience wait until next week to hear the exciting conclusion? I mean, that theater just blew up. And I thought about it, and I said, you know, that's what they would do in the old days. I'd string you along, and you'd have to tune in next week in order to, you know, I mean, it'd be like, well, geez, what happened? I don't know what's going on. And then, you know, oh, yeah. And then, I'm, you know, you call me on the phone, and I'm like, well, hey, buddy, just tune in next week. And it strings you out like a heroin junkie, and, you know, you're like, and that's how it used to be. You didn't used to have, like, 4,000 channels coming to a television set in your living room. I mean, people used to sit in front of a radio, and they would listen, and they would hear stories, and there would be voices, and there would be people doing things. There were so many more jobs back then. People doing radio programs for, like, you know, every market. Nowadays, you've got, like, you know, you've got your, well, here's a show you might hear in the morning if you're tuning around. It might have country music or classic rock involved. Here's 5 seconds of that program. Yeah, anyways, the world changed after 9/11, but maybe it changed most for Muslim Americans. VT's Department of Religion and Culture will be hosting a public lecture on Muslim Americans and U.S. politics, Thursday, February 23rd, 5 p.m. in 124 War Memorial Hall, part of a lecture series on the future of American religion, free and open to all. I might suggest they have this one written a little better. It was number 7. We are keeping it for another 2 weeks. I think it could use a little work. But that's me. And, yeah. Anyways, I've done my duties. I'm going to turn you over to side 2. Lucky you.
This is side 2. If you want to play the record from the beginning, please turn over. Do not play this side if you want side 1. This is side 2.
We would like to apologize to purchasers of the executive version of this record for the peremptory nature of that announcement. The brusque tone was intended for buyers of the cheaper version.
The story of the film so far. Doug and Bob are metropolitan policemen with a difference. Doug likes nothing more than slipping into little cocktail frocks while Bob bouffons his hair for a night on duty. Still, as they aren't in this film, we won't give their last names. The real story of the film so far. Plucky Reginald Vass Deferens is a nuclear scientist in love with mafia boss Enrico Marx, who is himself married to Conchita Macbeth, a lively belly dancer at a Belgian disco, whose manager, burly Ivan Crabb, has a naked daughter, Janice, engaged to J.J. Spim, a New York private detective, employed by elegant Laura Herron to trace the missing million-pound V-Day that Hitler gave to Eva Braun as a bar mitzvah present during a state visit to Crufts, and which remained hidden until a World Cup referee, Horst Jenkinson, was found hanged in a New Jersey tenement with the plans of a Russian secret weapon partially tattooed on his elbow. In Brisbane, the Brain brothers, Nicky and Vance, torture a Mayfair trichologist who reveals to Dora Brain in a tender and emotional death scene that his hair is not his own. Meanwhile, the Kent Touring Eleven have trapped Husky Matilda Tritt on a sticky near Hastings, and she reveals all before enforcing the follow-on. Peter Neeserwand and Cyril Garfunkel arrive just in time with the Welsh police and the Halley Orchestra and proceed to sing a love song which allows Dr. Indira McNaughton just enough time to cross the Alps into Geneva, where he meets Con Rapp, a kung fu fanatic and cat lover who frivolously shoots him, but not before introducing him to lively, intelligent Norwegian widow Lanny Crimpt, who shows him her inner thighs, where he finds the address of a good French restaurant and unexpectedly meets Gabriello Machismo, an ex-Korean plastic surgeon whose frankly blonde assistant Sally Lesbitt is now the half-brother of a distant cousin of Rafe Vaughan Ding Ding A Dong, the Eurovision song, and owner of the £1 million B-Day given by Hitler to Eva Braun as a bar mitzvah present during a state visit to Crufts, and which remained hidden, etc., etc., etc. This they now do. Meanwhile, Harold and Victor Medway III discover a newfound love for each other in a flashback near Devon, where they meet up with Doug and Bob, the metropolitan policemen who surprisingly turn out to be in this film after all, who kill everyone and live happily ever after.
The Tale of Sir Robin. So each of the knights went their separate ways. Sir Robin rode north through the dark forest of Ewing, accompanied by his favorite minstrels.
Bravely bold Sir Robin rode forth from Camelot. He was not afraid to die, oh brave Sir Robin. He was not at all afraid to be killed in nasty ways. Brave, 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 brave Sir Robin. He was not in the least bit scared to be mashed into a pulp, for to have his eyes gouged out and his elbows broken, to have his kneecaps split and his body burned away, and his limbs all hacked and mangled, brave Sir Robin. His head smashed in and his heart cut out and his liver removed and his bowels unplugged and his nostrils raped and his bottom burnt off and his penis...
That's enough music for now, lads. Looks like there's dirty work afoot.
Yes, it was the dreaded three-headed knight, the fiercest creature for yards around. For second after second, Robin held his own, but the onslaught proved too much for this brave knight. Scarcely was his armor damped when Robin suddenly, dramatically changed his tactics.
He's
fired
it off. So he has, he's scarpered.
Brave Sir Robin ran away.
No!
Bravely ran away, away.
I didn't.
When danger reared its ugly head, he bravely turned his tail and
no.
fled. His brave Sir Robin turned about.
I didn't!
He chickened out, bravely taking
I two never
feet.
Did!
He beat a very brave retreat.
Oh, Lord!
Brave Sir Robin!
I never!
Meanwhile, King Arthur and Sir Bedivere, not more than a swallow's flight away, had discovered something. Who are you?
We are the knights who say... Nee.
No, not nee. The knights who say nee.
The same.
Who are they?
We are the keepers of the sacred words. Nee, peng, and nee-wom.
Those who hear them seldom live to tell the tale.
The knights who say nee demand a sacrifice.
Knights of nee, we are but simple travelers who seek the enchanter who lives beyond these woods.
Nee. We shall say ni again to you if you do not appease us.
Well, what is it you want?
We want a shrubbery.
A what? Please, please, no more. We will find you a shrubbery.
You must return here with a shrubbery, or else you will never pass through this wood alive.
Oh, Knights of Nee, you are just and fair, and we will return with a shrubbery.
One that looks nice.
Of course.
And not too expensive.
Yes.
Now, go!
Oh, Knights of Nee, we have brought you your shrubbery. May we go now?
It is a good shrubbery. I like the laurels particularly. But there is one small problem.
What is that?
We are now no longer the knights who say nee. We are now the knights who say ecky, 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 ecky. Therefore, we must give you a test.
What is this test, O knights of... knights who till recently said nee?
Firstly, you must find another shrubbery.
Not another shrubbery.
Then, when you have found the shrubbery, you must place it here beside this shrubbery, only slightly higher, so you get a two-level effect with a little path running down the middle. Then, when you have found the shrubbery, you must cut down the mightiest tree in the forest with a herring.
Welcome back to the rear stalls. There seems to have been a slight hitch with the film here at Silbury Hill. I can see Vincent Wong, the Sino-Scottish projectionist, lashed to his projector, beating himself with a stick as he tries to put on the next reel, which the enormous grizzly is trying to prise from his grasp. And yes, it is on. It's on, and I think we're all right. I'm sorry about that delay, and back to the film.
You crumbum! You always come back here, crawl. Well, this time you've crawled too far.
Oh, Jim! Why did you do it? You could have destroyed the cage, and none of us left his back legs.
An excerpt from Carl French's latest film. Carl, we're all a little mystified by your claim that your new film stars Marilyn Monroe.
It does, yes.
Who died over 10 years ago.
That's correct.
Are you lying?
No, it's just that she's very much in the public eye at the moment.
Does she have a big part?
She is the star of the film.
And dead?
Well, we dug her up and gave her a screen test, a mere formality in her case, and...
Can she still act?
Well, she still has this enormous, a kind of indefinable, no.
Was decomposition a problem?
We did have to put her in the fridge between takes.
What sort of things does she do in the film?
Well, we had her lying on beds, lying on floors, falling out of cupboards, scaring the children.
But surely Miss Munro was cremated?
Well, we had to use a stand-in for some of the more visible shots.
Another actress?
A dead actress, but Munro was in shot the whole time.
How?
Oh, in the ashtray, and a fire grate, and a vacuum cleaner.
So Marilyn does not appear in the film?
Not as such.
Mr. French, you're one of the film world's most arrogant queens. I mean, not just homosexual or gay or anything. I mean, you are a raving queen.
Well, yes.
I mean, a real screamer, a real whoops, get her, don't mind me, dear limp-wristed caricature.
Is that not in order?
No, that's fine. And I understand that you married the beautiful black heiress, Huina Tanoy, partly for the publicity, but mostly to cover up the fact that you prefer going out with little boys.
Look, really?
Carl, you're an effeminate little puff, a mincing gay bar loiterer, a Winnet-covered walking perfume shop, and an evil perverter of innocent little boys.
What? Really? Is this part of the interview?
No. I just wanted a few contacts.
Well, shouldn't we be talking about the film?
We've been off the air for ages now. Where'd you find them?
Look, I think we are still on the air.
Oh, so the fucking air. Can't you still get locked up to that sort of thing?
Well, what about the film?
Just a few addresses, please.
Look, we've got James Dean in it, in a box.
I can turn the microphone off, if you
And bits of Jane Mansfield.
Well, back here at the Classic, I have good news that Vincent Wong, horribly mutilated though he is, his partly dismembered shoulder bound together with an old print-off top hat, has managed to select the correct reel, and we're back with Monty Python and the Holy Grail once again.
As Sir Lancelot, the boldest and most expensive of the knights, lost his way in the Forest of Ewing, at nearby Swamp Castle, a celebration was underway.
One day, lad, all this will be yours.
What, the curtains?
No, not the curtains, lad. All that you can see stretched out over the hills and valleys of this land. That'll be your kingdom, lad.
But mother.
Father, lad, father.
But father, I don't want any of that.
Listen, lad, I built this kingdom up from nothing. When I started here, all there was swamp. Well, the king said I was daft to build a castle on the swamp. But I built it all the same, just to show them. It sank into the swamp. So, I built a second one. That sank into the swamp. So I built a third one. That burned down, fell over, then sank into the swamp. But the fourth one stayed up. And that's what you're going to get, lad. The strongest castle in these isles.
But I don't want any of that. I'd rather...
Rather what?
I'd rather just sing.
Stop that. You're not going into a song while I'm here. Now, listen, lad. In 20 minutes, you're getting married to a girl whose father owns the biggest tracts of open land in Britain.
But I don't want land.
Listen, Alice.
Herbert.
We live on a bloody swamp. We need all the land we can get.
But I don't like her.
Don't like her? What's wrong with her? She's beautiful. She's rich. She's got huge tracts of land.
I I know. But I want the girl that I marry to have a certain special something.
Cut that out! Cut that out! What? You're marrying Princess Lucky, so you better get used to the idea. Guards! Make sure the prince doesn't leave this room until I come and get him.
Not to leave the room, even if you come and get him.
No, no. Until I come and get him.
Until you come and get him, we're not to enter the room.
No, no, no. You stay in the room and make sure he doesn't leave.
And you'll come and get him.
Right.
We don't need to do anything apart from just stop him entering the room.
No, no. Leaving the room.
Leaving the room, yes.
All right?
Right. Oh, if
look, it's quite simple. You just stay here and make sure he doesn't leave the room. All right?
Check. Oh, I remember. Can he leave the room with us?
No. You just keep him in here and make sure...
Oh, yes, we'll keep him in here, obviously. But if he had to leave and we weren't with him...
Just keep him in here...
Until you or anyone else...
No, not anyone else, just me.
Just you.
Get back.
Get back.
Right?
Right, we'll stay here until you get back.
And make sure he doesn't leave.
What?
Make sure he doesn't leave.
The prince?
Yes, make sure he doesn't leave.
Oh, yes, of course. I thought you meant him. You know, it seemed a bit daft me having to guard him when he's a guard.
Is that clear?
Oh, quite clear. No problems.
Right. Where are you going?
We're coming with you.
No, I want you to stay here and make sure he doesn't leave.
Oh, I see. Right.
But father...
Shut your noise, you, and get that suit on. And no singing. Oh, go and get a glass of water.
Tim, the bizarre and oddly dressed enchanter, provides the knights with the final clue that leads them to the Holy Grail.
Yes, I can help you find the Holy Grail.
Oh, thank you.
To the north there lies a cave. The cave of Caer Banog, wherein, carved in mystic runes upon the very living rock, the last words of Ulfin Bedwyr of Reged make plain the last resting place of the most holy grail.
A fine performance there in the role of Tim the Magician,
Vernon
by
Tate,
Harry Cripps,
drama critic of the Transport and General Workers Union.
And a performance that will live in the memory, along with Sir John Gielgud's Lear at Stratford in 1952, Burt Lancaster's extraordinary Tinkerbell in Peter Pan at the Globe in 65, Norman Hunter's uncompromising Polonius at the National 3 years ago, and most recently by Claire Bloom's breathtaking portrayal as Jackie Charlton in Peter Hall's Romeo and Juliet, where Miss Bloom's delicate command of the Rococo intricacies of Geordie abuse was matched only by her tight ball control in the balcony scene. But of all these, Sir John Gielgud's Lear stays longest in the memory. Many people still recall his brilliant performances at Stratford that year, but I prefer to remember him one autumn afternoon in front of a hostile crowd at Molyneux. The play had been getting pretty rough, with Goneril and Kent both booked before the interval, and Albany, Edgar and Regan sent off on the hour mark, but the trouble really began when Cornwall blatantly blinded Gloucester in the penalty area and referee Ken Parry of Swansea waved play on, unleashing a storm of booing from the incensed Gloucester supporters, which reached a crescendo as Sir John stepped forward.
The trick of that place I do well remember.
Is not the king?
Aye, every inch a king. When I do stare, see how the subject quakes. I pardon that man's life. What was thy cause? Adultery? Thou shalt not die. No, die for adultery, no. The wren goes to it and the small gilded fly dies lecher in my sight. Let population cry. The Gloucester's bastard son was kinder to his after than my daughter's got between the waters.
An outstanding performance there. Sir Al.
Yes, he's certainly very tremendous in terms of his talking and moving and gesturing
and being an actor in general. In fact, in terms of his acting, I would say. Cho En Lai.
I was tempted to recall the Grenadier Guards in the role of Macbeth.
Some daggers that we see before us, the anvils towards our hands. Come, let us touch thee. We have thee not, and yet we see thee still.
The finest masked Shakespearean tragic hero I've certainly ever seen. Sir Ralph.
Well, we're going back to join the film in the 62nd minute in terms of the... where there's been fighting and killing of the knights by the rabbit in general.
Run away! Run away! Run away! Run away!
Right, how many did we lose?
Gawain,
Hector, and Bors, that's five. Fleeter, three. And we better not risk another frontal assault, that rabbit's dynamite.
Would it help to confuse it if we run away more?
Oh, shut up and go and change your armor. Let us taunt it. It may become so cross that it will make a mistake.
Like what?
Well,
have we got bows?
No.
We have the holy hand grenade.
Yes, of course. The holy hand grenade of Antioch. It is one of the sacred relics Brother Maynard carries with him.
Brother Maynard, bring up the holy hand grenade.
Yes, O Domine.
Dona eis requiem.
Yes, O Domine.
Dona eis requiem.
How does it, how does it work?
I know not, my liege.
Consult the Book of Armaments.
Armaments, chapter 2, verses 9 to 21.
And St. Attila raised the hand grenade up on high, saying, O Lord, bless this thy hand grenade, that with it thou mayst blow thine enemies to tiny bits. In thy mercy. And the Lord did grin, and the people did feast upon the lambs, and sloths, and carp, and anchovies, and orangutans, and breakfast cereals, and fruit bats, and large...
Skip a bit, brother.
And the Lord spake, saying, First shalt thou take out the holy pin, then shalt thou count to three, no more, no less. Three shall be the number thou shalt count, and the number of the counting shall be three. Four shalt thou not count, neither count thou two, excepting that thou then proceed to three. Five is right out. Once the number three, being the third number, be reached, then lobbest thou thy holy hand grenade of Antioch towards thy foe, who, being not in my sight, shall snuff it.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Right.
One, two, five!
Please,
three!
For purchasers of the cheaper version of this record, it has already ended. For purchasers of the executive version, there are three more minutes of this album. These 3 minutes are introduced personally by Sir Kenneth Clark.
Hello? This is a very nice record, this is. It's a very, very nice record. That's why I like it, because it's very nice.
No. No, that was him. Yes. Oh, yes, what? Well, he had a bit of a cold. No, I promise you it was. Look, please, you'll miss the end of the story.
The Castle Arn. Our quest is at an end. God be praised. Almighty God, we thank thee that thou hast vouchsafed to us the most potent.
Jesus Christ!
Hello, daffy English kniggets and Monsieur Arthur King, who has the brain of a duck, you know. So, we French fellows outwit you a second time.
How dare you profane this place with your prince? I command you,
in the name of the Knights of Camelot, to open the doors of this sacred castle to which God himself has guided us.
How you English say, ah, one more time, Max. Unclog my nose in your direction, sons of a window dresser. So you think you could out-clever us French folk with your silly knees-bent running about advancing behavior? I'll wave my private pats at your aunties, you cheesy lot of second-hand electric donkey-bottom biters.
In the name of the Lord, we demand entrance to this sacred castle.
No chance, English bed-wetting types. I'll burst my pimples at you and call your door-opening request a silly thing. You tiny-brained whappers of other people's bottoms.
If you do not open this door, we shall take this castle by force. In the name of God and the glory of our... Right! That settles it!
Yes! We've had a lot of this time and can't be approaching anymore, or we fire arrows in the tops of your heads and make castanets out of your testicles already!
Walk away! Just ignore them!
No! Remain guard, illegitimate-faced banner folk! And if you think you've got a nasty taunty this time, you ain't heard nothing yet, scabby English pinnigget!
Well, that's about it, really. The film ends mainly visually.
The album of the soundtrack of the trailer of the film of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, executive version, brought to you. So that, yeah, there you are. I didn't get in the side part of the hour here, so I will... Oh, let's see what I'm going to do. We'll read this one. Yeah, I guess that is a good question. Here we are. Public service announcement number 40. We are killing this one at the end of next week. The Nepalese Student Association at Virginia Tech is presenting Nepal Night 2012 on February 18th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. in the Graduate Life Center Auditorium. This event will celebrate Virginia Tech's diversity with acoustic performances, traditional dances, martial arts demonstrations, and a fashion show. And goodness, the phone is ringing, but I don't know what to do with that, so I'm just going to let it ring. I can't do anything about it. But, yes, oh, looky there, here we are. We're within the window. The window. It's 6 before or 6 after the top of the hour. I am supposed to legally identify the station that I am broadcasting with. And so therefore, I tell you, this is the big waste of time. Global Chemical Corporate Empire and Theme Park Industrial Complex Consortium presents the Doncast here with myself, Don the Don Rosberger, on the station you love, in the town where you live, WUVT FM 90.7, Blacksburg, Virginia. Yes, here we are. They have this, I hear the other kids here on the station, they're like, the greatest radio station in the world. And, yeah, I mean, it's cool. I think it's pretty good. I got no complaints. Other than those kids who think the name of the station is WVT. But that's an argument for another time. I'm not here to make arguments. I am here to waste your time so that you do not have to. That last hour went by like a breeze. And, yes, I didn't even, like, taunt you and make you listen next week for part two to find out what happened. Because, I mean, I know you didn't know what was going on. But, yeah. So, anyways, I'm going to go here to this player here, number 3. I'm going to hit the button here in just a moment. This is from the Spasm Smash XXOXOX Oxen Ass album. This is Truman's Water. The aroma of Gina Arnold.